Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
You're listening to the best of Montana Talks.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Man, I tell you what, Montana is so excited to welcome Gordon G. Chang to Big Sky Country, to the Treasure State here coming up Friday, June 6th. He'll be speaking in Columbus. Saturday, June 7th, he'll be in Miles City with the Patriot Roundtable there. Gordon G. Chang, you can find him on X at Gordon G. Chang. He's with the Gatestone Institute. He's also the author of Plan Red, China's Project to Destroy America. Mr. Chang, what an honor to have you on the show this morning. Can't wait to see you here in Montana.
Well, it's an honor for me to be on your show and to eventually be in Montana next month. So we're really looking forward to that.
Well, yeah, I'm sure Montana's been on your radar because, hey, the China spy balloon, this is where it first broke as a public news story, and then the communist Chinese have been spying on our nuclear missile bases and more.
Yes, and you've got to remember, that balloon actually traveled over America's nuclear weapons sites. So you have Malmstrom Air Force Base, which is in Montana. There was Effie Warren in Wyoming and Minot in North Dakota, as well as that balloon passed near Omaha, Nebraska, which is Offutt Air Force Base, where U.S. Strategic Command has its headquarters that controls all of U.S. nuclear weapons. And it flew by Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri, where the home to all of our B-2 strategic bombers. So this balloon was going over our nuke sites, which means that China is preparing a strike on those sites.
Well, and big surprise there, it's also been documented that they have simulated American aircraft carriers in a desert that they're using for target practice. What is China's project to destroy America, or China's plan to try and destroy America, with about a minute or so to go before we go to our first break here?
Well, the most important thing is that Beijing believes it is in an existential struggle with the U.S. and must destroy our country if it is to survive. So this is a zero-sum fight. We can't cooperate with China as much as we'd like to, as long as it's ruled by the Communist Party, which means we have to recognize the fundamental challenge to our society.
And why does this matter to Montana in particular? I mean, even putting the United States of America aside for just a moment, Montana in particular.
Well, because of Malmstrom Air Force Base, which is in your state, which will be a target. So Montanans will be a target of a Chinese nuclear weapons strike.
Well, so much looking forward to having you here in Montana. What's going to be the focus of your speech?
I'll be talking about what we just discussed, the nature of China's challenge, talk a little bit about China's overall goals to rule the world, not control it or dominate it, but to rule the world. And we'll talk about what China's been doing to undermine the U.S. and to take us down, including
all
federal
right.
debt.
Hold that thought. I also want to get his take on the weakened power, or hopefully the weakened power, of the communist Chinese leader Xi Jinping. We'll start there right after this quick break. Meanwhile, though, back in China, this whole tariff fight and this tariff war, whatever you want to call it, as I understand it, has really significantly weakened communist Chinese leader Xi Jinping. Gordon Chang, your thoughts?
Yes, it certainly has. Even before President Trump took his second oath of office, the Chinese export sector was ailing because it didn't have enough orders, and we saw factories which were running at very low capacity. Of course, the tariff war has exacerbated that, where we see factories closing, workers are on the streets, they haven't gotten paid. And also, there are hints that with personal loans, the smaller loans now going bust, smaller financial institutions don't have the liquidity to pay back their deposits. depositors. So Chinese depositors are now on the streets as well. So this is a very dangerous situation. With the 90-day pause on the tariff war, that's certainly going to help because this is Christmas season for Chinese factories. And so they will have relief at a very important time.
This is when they build all the, I just want to say, all the junk that people are going to start buying about 6 months from now or so, basically, 5-6 months from now.
That's right, because you got to remember that it takes a long lead time for manufacture and then to ship into the United States. So essentially, June is the beginning of the Christmas season.
So, Montanans, we're in this interesting situation to where, okay, we understand the threat, at least our listeners do. We understand the threat of the Communist Chinese. We knew exactly what they were doing with that spy balloon, even as the media and the Biden regime was downplaying the threat. But simultaneously, we also want access to the Chinese market for our beef, which President Trump first got open in his first term, along with Montana Senator Steve Daines, and we want access for our grain markets as well. So we're kind of caught in the middle when it comes to understanding the threat, but also needing the opportunity.
Yes. One of the things about Xi Jinping, there are two factors. One of them is he is stockpiling grain and other commodities because it looks like he wants to go to war. But also, he does not want to be dependent on foreign sources. So really what the problem for China is going to be, for people looking at the China market, is that Xi Jinping doesn't want foreign products, and he certainly doesn't want American ones in general. And this has nothing to do with the tariff situation. So it's going to be difficult for people in Montana selling beef or grain or whatever to the Chinese.
He might do it temporarily just to, you know, as a political maneuver, but then eventually he'll figure out a way to dump their products on the market to undercut us and push us out at some point.
Well, yeah, they don't grow that much, and their food self-sufficiency has been declining. So they will need to continue to buy foreign food for at least a little while. But China is stockpiling a lot, which means that at some point they will not be purchasing abroad.
So it sounds like you really think because of Xi Jinping's weakened position that might force him to eventually break out a war situation, kind of like, you know, Vladimir Putin. His polls were sinking with the Russian people, so he wanted to then lash out and basically start a war to try to gain domestic sympathy. How do we as the United States of America press for reform, press this fight against the Chinese while not pressing so hard that it leads to an all-out war? Or is, what's your thoughts?
We only have limited influence on what happens inside the Chinese regime. So I don't believe that we should be trying to play politics. But a couple things are evident. One of them is that we know the Chinese people don't want war. So it's possible Xi Jinping would try to rally the Chinese with a war. But I think that Xi believes ultimately that this is not going to be something that's going to be good for his support among the Chinese populace. I do believe, though, that he believes a war is in his interest because it will prevent other senior Communist Party figures from challenging or deposing him. And this is what his hero Mao Zedong did in terms of the Cultural Revolution, where Mao started the Cultural Revolution because he knew that by mobilizing the Chinese people, it would prevent other Communist Party figures from taking him down because his position was increasingly fragile before 1966 when he started the Cultural Revolution. So I think it's more elite politics play than anything else. But whatever it is war, and that means we have to prepare for it, we have to defend our friends and allies, and we have to defend ourselves because the Chinese are coming for us.
Very interesting. Well, Gordon G. Chang, he will be here in Montana June 6th in Columbus, June 7th at Miles City Livestock with the Patriots Roundtable there. I've got a full story on our Montana Talks website with the flyers and the details and more. Now is the time. If you guys have been hearing me talk about this great product, Power Plus Pain Aid, created by a Big Fork Montana Marine Corps veteran. If you've been hearing me talk about it and you've been thinking, man, I should really give that stuff a try, now is the time to give it a try. Now is the time to buy the product, because, you know, we have an ongoing discount when you use our special code here for our Montana Talks listeners. But for Memorial Day, they've got a nationwide promotion, 25% off their Power Plus Pain Aid 12 packs. But they want to do even more for you. They want to even do even more for our Montana Talks listeners. So what they're going to do is 30% off their 12 packs of the Power Plus Pain Aid. This is energizing pain reliever. It's like an energy drink with pain relieving vitamins. 30% off the 12 packs all weekend until Monday night at midnight. Here is the promo code to use for the 30% off. Use this promo code, FLINTUSA. Flint USA, get 30% off the Power Plus Pain Aid 12 packs. Go to drinkpowerplus.com. Drinkpowerplus.com.
Want more Montana Talks? Download the app and listen from anywhere, anytime. We'll be back with more of Best of Montana Talks.
Securing America.
Florida Attorney General James Uthmeyer announced the winners of the state's first ever Law Enforcement Team of the Year Award Thursday, recognizing sheriff's deputies and dispatchers from Palm Beach and Martin counties who worked together to capture suspect Ryan Ruth after his failed assassination attempt of President Trump last September.
It started with an off-duty Palm Beach sheriff's officer getting a tip about what was going on, immediately reacting, notifying other officers in the area.
Uthmeyer saying of the effort and ensuing chase which led to Ruth's capture,
it could have been a much worse day.
And not allowing the recipients of the award to dismiss their accomplishments.
You say, oh, I was just doing my job, sir. I was just following my training. I was just following protocols. Well, today we're not going to let you get away with that. We're going to give you an award. You deserve it.
Kevin Uretsky, Fox News.
You're listening to the Best of Montana Talks.
Caden, good to have you here in studio. Thanks for all you do for the show, by the way, every day.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's great to actually be in here talking, so.
Yeah, well, it's funny because when you first came on board with the show, you know, you're like, well, I've never really been much of a news and a political and a talk guy. I'm more of a sports guy. And I was like, that's actually great because it's good to get a different perspective. And, hey, there's some big sports stories from time to time, so it'll be good to have somebody who can weigh in on that. And really, baseball. High school baseball, this really is kind of it's not the first year of high school baseball. We've long had Legion baseball, but I know it's very exciting. This is really kind of the first big year for baseball, certainly in the Billings area, but really across the state of Montana.
Yeah, and that's, like you just said, here in Billings, the Billings area, I mean, we got Skyview, West, and Senior, but then also Central, we had Laurel, we had Huntley, there, you know, Columbus, the co-op with Red Lodge, they're all coming in this year. So, yeah, no, it's been really great. 35 teams total across the state playing this year, all in the same, you know, same division, same conference, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, only 8 spots available. It's tough to see that many teams go out. But, you know, I think it's been a really successful year from what I've seen. I'm sure Scott Wilson has been very busy, you know, having 35 teams to look over. But, exciting weekend this week in Hamilton.
How fun has it been for you with a front row seat as an umpire? Just what's it been like being an umpire in some of these games?
You know, the great thing is a lot of the games that I've worked have been close games, which you always want, you know, when the pitchers are pitching well and the batters are swinging the bat, it's a good time for everyone, you know, even if it does get contentious at times. Honestly, it's just been great for me to see these kids who may not get an opportunity, largely because Legion is so cost, you know, if you don't have the money, you can't play Legion. But with high school baseball, you know, anyone can join the team because it's a high school sport now. So that's been one of the best parts for me, is seeing these kids that don't always get the opportunity to play, getting the chance to play.
Yeah, well, I want to toss the microphone over to you once again here in a second so that you can talk a little inside baseball from a sports perspective with our guest. But first, yeah, let's get the big picture here. Scott Wilson is the associate director for the Montana High School Association. Scott, great to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, and thanks for asking me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, how exciting is this for you? I mean, once this first, I guess give us the history on high school baseball in Montana and how this opportunity, what it took to finally make this happen and how you see it expanding in the years ahead.
Okay, so we are in year three of the high school baseball, and kind of how any sport starts in our association is one of our member schools, you know, we have 182 member schools in the Montana High School Association, and one of the member schools has to make a proposal. We have an annual meeting that happens every January, and a school has to propose to our membership an addition of a sport. And so that was done for baseball. The membership passed it, and the next year we started off baseball with, you know, 24 teams. And so it, you know, is growing. As Caden said, it's up to 35. This year was our biggest year. You know, we've had, you know, the first group of schools that we're in have been in since the start of it. And then we added, you know, the schools this year to get us up to 35.
Yeah, and it's been kind of fun, too, you know, as I've been sitting at volleyball tournaments with one of my kids, with my daughter. It's fun running into different friends, old Army buddies, et cetera. And, you know, one of them, he lives down in the Red Lodge area, and so he was taught, you know, he's big into baseball. He's a Colstrip guy. And so it's interesting, you know, this year the Colstrip area, Carbon County kids are kind of teaming up with Columbus, for example, to create a combined team there. But eventually they'll probably break off and have more of a Carbon County-specific team. So we're going to see more and more teams really get added into the equation here. This all-class thing is what I find really fascinating as well, because small town, big town, combined teams, solo teams, you name it, everybody's all in the same dog pile.
Yeah, and that's definitely, you know, something that, you know, that was decided from the beginning, is to just run it as an all class. You know, we will have, you know, some decisions to make moving forward as a high school association, you know, to see. Ultimately, the goal for us with baseball is to end up kind of mirroring what softball does in our state, which we have a double A conference, we have a class A conference, and then we have a BC conference. And so that, you know, that's the ultimate goal, is as the sport continues, you know, to increase the number of teams playing. Right now, currently, we don't have official numbers yet in terms of, you know, official commitments yet, but right now it looks like that we have seven teams that are very interested in adding, and six of those teams are double A teams. And so, you know, our double A has definitely grown here over the last, you know, couple of years with the addition this year of the three Billings double A schools and the three Missoula double A schools.
Well, I'm going to toss it over to our producer, Caden Bjornstad, here. Caden, yeah, you print it up for us here, the schedule for tomorrow, the 2025 All-Class State Baseball Tournament with four games kicking off Thursday. Man, we should have got you over there doing some play-by-play for some of our stations or something, because that'd be fun to see that.
Yeah, no, I never did play-by-play baseball, but definitely something I'd be down to do if the opportunity ever arose. Scott, you know, you mentioned nine teams on the books for next year. Hopefully, we heard a report this morning about the Great Falls schools still trying to bring in money to bring those baseball teams in. What's been some of the big challenges about getting schools to buy into having a baseball team?
I think the first challenge is that, you know, in terms of overall picture of school funding, is, you know, funding is tight with a lot of our schools across the state. So, you know, I think that that's probably the number one hurdle that schools have had to overcome. Some schools have been able to, you know, find the funding in their budgets to be able to add it, you know, and having the school fund the program. Some schools have elected to ask their local booster clubs to help fund that over either a year or up to a 3-year, you know, depending on, you know, what the decision is made, you know, by their local school boards. So I think that's probably the biggest hurdle. You know, Great Falls is, you know, that's when we don't have the final commitment, you know, as you just mentioned, you know, is that when you have towns that are working with their local booster club, you know, those funds have to come in before you can officially commit, you know, to the program. So that, and then I think probably our next biggest challenge that the schools have had to face is the actual field time and field space. You know, a lot of districts don't have a baseball facility on their school property, so they're using, you know, renting out, you know, city parks, you know, renting with their local Legion teams, things like that. So those are probably the two biggest hurdles that schools face when adding baseball.
Yeah, and, you know, going along that, here in Billings, we've been lucky because we have both Pertz and Dealer. Obviously, Dealer being where the Mustangs play here in Billings, and then Pertz, the local Legion school. But, you know, one of the big things coming into the NFHS that I've noticed over the last few years is the streaming of the games. And, you know, baseball, we got Game Changer that the teams are putting stats and sort of streaming on. Are there any plans for the MHSF to expand into not only streaming for baseball, but streaming across the state, across high school sports?
Well, we all, you know, with all of our sports, we have the NFHS network, and that's actually who, you know, will run our postseason events. So every one of the state baseball games will be streamed on the NFHS network, along with, you know, our state softball and our state track events. But that's, you know, that's the postseason piece. And then schools have the ability to stream on the NFHS network as well during the regular season. One of the things, the challenges that we had for streaming in softball and baseball was the locations of the fields, with them being, you know, in, like I said, city parks or Legion fields, things like that, not having the ability to stream those on the NFHS network. Our board just recently passed that those games could be streamed on a platform like Game Changer.
Thanks, Scott, again for coming on with us today. You know, looking back at the season, we started back in the end of March. You know, the weather's been Montana weather. We've had snow, rain, everything in between. What's been some of the difficulties with playing baseball in a climate where the weather isn't really great enough until, you know, now as we enter the end of the school year?
Yeah, I think our biggest thing with baseball, you know, when it comes to the weather is obviously, you know, you have to expect that you're going to, you know, have some practices probably inside, you know, indoors in a gym or, you know, somewhere. And then you're also going to have some games that are rescheduled. And I think the biggest challenge that schools have with baseball is, you know, like, I'll compare it to softball. You know, when you play, you know, if you reschedule a softball game that was supposed to be, let's say, on Tuesday, you can probably say, hey, let's play it tomorrow, you know, the next day, Wednesday, even though I know we have a game Thursday and possibly Friday. With baseball, the schools have to keep in mind when they reschedule is, can there, you know, do they have enough pitchers that can, to, you know, keep up with the rules on pitch counts? You know, and so that is one of the big challenges, you know, that schools have to face with the reschedule. And then also, you know, as we grow as a sport, you know, with this number of schools, we're also, you know, each year we've added the number of umpires and also having umpire availability, you know. So, you know, I think our schools and our umpires did a great job this year. We had a lot of games that, you know, we ended up playing on Mondays and, you know, pretty much every day of the week except for Sunday, which is the only day we don't allow, you know, games to happen. But I think, you know, between the pitch counts, you know, making sure that that's a part of the equation and then making sure that we have umpires available are the two challenges.
What was some of the best parts of the year from the administration standpoint?
You know, I think just watching, you know, like I mentioned earlier, we had a handful of schools that have been doing this for 3 years, and then watching the progression of the teams that were brand new this year has been exciting. Myself and the tournament manager, Travis Bloom in Hamilton, had a coaches meeting last night, and I told the coaches, you know, that this is great. You know, we have four schools that have been, you know, been there before, and then we have four brand new schools participating this year at state baseball. So I look forward to this part of it. You know, I think our play-in games was a good addition last year to try to get, you know, at least, you know, that chance. If you have a conference that's a little bit stronger than the other one, you know, get another team to the state tournament. But I look forward to this weekend. I think it's, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of good baseball being played.
This is where Montana talks at with Lane Nordlund.
This Memorial Day, I would like to honor Montana's sons and daughters who gave their lives in service to our nation. From the wheat fields of the Golden Triangle to the high plains of eastern Montana. From the mountain towns of the west to the ranches along the Muscle Shell, brave Montanans have always answered the call. Young men and women who grew up branding calves, fixing fence, and playing under big sky sunsets. Many traded in boots and cowboy hats for helmets and uniforms. Some never came home. We remember those who left places like Miles City Belt, Havre, Dillon, and Plentywood, who fought in wars far from the prairies and peaks they called home. Their sacrifice is etched into the soil of the state and into the hearts of every Montanan who values freedom, faith, and family. As we've all gathered this Memorial Day weekend, we remember the Montanans who paid the ultimate price. From all of us here on these radio waves, we thank them and we honor their legacy. Because here in Montana, we know freedom isn't free. I'm Lane Nordlund.
You're listening to the best of Montana Talks.
Scott Jennings, great to have you with us here on Montana Talks. Thanks for your time this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Thanks for the introduction, and thanks for watching CNN on one night. That was great.
Well, if I see you, I to be fair, I don't watch a lot of TV. I listen to a lot of it, but one of our listeners, Tim in Billings, he heard you were going to be on. He messaged me earlier. He says, "Can you ask Scott Jennings later this morning how incredibly hard it is to resist the temptation of doing the loser Fortnite dance over the bodies of the liberals that he slays on a nightly basis on the Communist News Network, figuratively speaking, of course?"
Well, you know, great question. That question would be of appealing to my children. I have four boys, and so any question about Fortnite, they'd be more apt to answer than me. But, you know, I find great value in this debating show because I think it's the only show like it on television. I mean, a lot of cable has become just five or six people sitting around agreeing with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, congratulating each other on their increasing levels of smugness. And so CNN comes up with this idea last year, let's have a debating show. And we put it on the air during the election. It was really popular. And it was supposed to be temporary. But now we're still doing it because there's a hunger for the debate. So whether I'm ducking on someone, which is most often, or someone's ducking on me, not very often, the point is, we're having a debate. We're having a real debate about serious issues. And even though sometimes I think the issues are framed, you know, pretty off the rails and wouldn't find their way back if it weren't for my intervention, I think the value is in the debate. And I believe in public discourse. I believe in civil discourse. And, you know, CNN, I got to give them credit. They put it on the air. They've left it there. And it's our highest rated show. And I think it's our fastest growing show. So you can tell the desire for debate is really out there.
Well, we're lucky to be on the radio because we take phone calls from anybody, and so it's always fun to hear from people that disagree and be heard by people that may not agree either. But it's important that there is that voice like you are in some of these dark places, like even Bill Maher from HBO, and he's expressing a lot more common sense recently. But I think you went on to his show on Friday and you spoke into some cultural issues that even resonated with his crowd.
They did. It was, what I do on CNN is not usually in front of a studio audience, so I wasn't sure what to expect out of the California audience. But yeah, we talked about immigration. We talked about some of the cultural rot that we have going on in America right now and the crisis that we're having among young people, young boys especially, but even some young women. And I was surprised. I said some things that I thought were pretty conservative, and that crowd was buying into it. And also, we talked a lot about Donald Trump's agenda, particularly as it relates to war and peace, or as I said on the air, peace and war, because he talks about peace more than he talks about war. And the crowd was kind of eating it up. And so what I walked out of there thinking about was there is a lot of cross-pollination right now on the right and left. You know, what we used to think of as red and blue, I think the old constructs are falling away. And Trump's actually assembled a pretty unique coalition that doesn't fit neatly from the old boxes that we used to have. That was one of the takeaways I had Friday. But I agree with you about Bill. He is a voice for free speech and free debate. And he is a pretty honest, good faith guy. So I really enjoyed being on the show.
Well, and it was interesting, too, because as you were, you know, talking out against pornography, the crowd kind of, you know, seemed to laugh at you, want to mock you. But then when you tied it into, you know, young women thinking that they have to sell themselves on OnlyFans and things like that, they actually got it. It actually resonated with them. And so I thought that was a really interesting back and forth. You talk about, you know, instead of war and peace, now it's the party of peace and war. It's very interesting because one of the things I hear from our fellow conservatives is like, you know, what they'll say is it's so remarkable that Scott Jennings is such a strong voice in support of President Donald Trump, because they'll say, you know, he was a Bush guy. And for whatever reason, a lot of Republicans who worked for older Republicans back in the day, nobody's ever as good as their guy. And they never want to, you know, they never want to support the next up and comer because nobody's ever going to be as good as their guy. How do you, as somebody who worked for Bush, then also, you know, support President Donald J. Trump?
Well, a good question, and I'll be the first to admit I didn't get it at first. You know, I was skeptical of Trump. I didn't, you know, wasn't from a Republican Party at all, and he came from the outside. I wasn't trained to believe that someone like that should be able to come in and take over a party. And I didn't get it, and I get it now. And I feel closer to Donald Trump today than I probably have ever felt, because I think he is standing up on two issues that are fundamental: the future of Western civilization and the right to free speech. If we lose either of those battles, we won't be around to argue about tariffs or anything else, because those are the fundamental issues that I think are defining our world politics today, and Trump is our leader in this battle. But I also thought that, you know, the previous Republicans, I mean, I think the right and the left are headed in two very different directions, and it's the right that's going to stand up for free speech and Western civilization. So as somebody who voted for Bush, I happily voted three times for Donald Trump. And I've never regretted it one moment, and feel really good about it today, because the alternative last year was a disaster.
You've got a book that gives an unprecedented inside look at how President Trump has retaken Washington by storm. And I, you know, his trip to the Middle East last week is just symbolic of not just taking, but you talk about how he's not just working to, you know, save America and restore common sense to American government, but this is about Western civilization itself.
Well, look, the barbarians are at the gates. I mean, look around the world. What happened on October the 7th, the migration crisis in Europe, frankly, the migration crisis in the United States, the free speech crisis in Europe, the free speech crisis here. I mean, we have people who fundamentally hate Western civilization and hate the American experiment and would love to get rid of it all. I mean, they think America is fundamentally rotten at the core. I mean, that's what a lot of people on the left believe. And so I wanted to write this book. I told the president in February, I thought 100 books would be written, you know, taking shots at him about the first 100 days. But I thought there should be a book that got to the core of what I think he's really doing and what most conservatives believe. He's standing up for Western civilization, and he's shaking up Washington. That's how we see it. I think he's met that standard. And the book is, I'm in editing right now on it. It's been an amazing process. It's my first book. But you can pre-order it today. It's called Revolution of Common Sense. Go on Amazon and pre-order it, and it'll be to you hopefully by November, December.
Yeah. What do you, when we talk about just Western civilization itself is on the brink, well, before we get into those big picture things, of course, the big news over the weekend, you know, we had the Her audio tapes released showing just how out of it Joe Biden was during that, you know, special counsel interview. We have, you know, another book coming out from CNN's Jake Tapper talking about how bad things actually were for Joe Biden. But now all of a sudden, and of course everybody's praying for the Biden family, President Trump is you know, offering his thoughts and condolences and prayers for the Biden family, but now all of a sudden they release his cancer diagnosis, but it almost seems like now they want everybody to just silence any criticism of the last 4 years of this regime now as a result.
Well, I think that's unfortunate, you know, the idea that you would use this cancer diagnosis to say, well, we're not allowed to talk about these issues anymore, because these issues that Jake and Alex Thompson, the other author of the book, are talking about are fundamental to the idea of a constitutional republic. I mean, look, well, here's what we know. The President of the United States was not well. He was mentally in decline. and a very small group of unelected people were shielding him from the rest of the government. I mean, his cabinet didn't even see him for the last 2 years. And I want to know who was making decisions on behalf of the country, because we elect a president. We don't elect a figurehead. We elect a president. And this is fundamental. And I heard all these Democrats after 2020 use the phrase the big lie. That's what they always wanted to talk about, the big lie. Brother, there's not a bigger lie than what went on with Joe Biden from 2020 through his term up until right now. And you think about all the Democrats that went on television and swore he was fine. Behind closed doors, he's fine. Now we know the truth. His cancer diagnosis is very unfortunate because he's obviously very sick, and you always wish the best for people who are going through something very painful. By the way, there's no way. There's no way they just found out about this on Friday. No way. I've seen 100 doctors on TV today saying it just didn't pop up overnight.
Yeah, especially when you're a president of the United States. When you're a president of the United States, more medical attention than probably any other person in the country, I could only imagine. Scott Jennings, CNN, Scott Jennings, yeah, his book comes out. You can pre-order it now, A Revolution of Common Sense. We've got about a minute to go before the break, and if you want to stick around, we'd keep you, but I imagine you got to run. But what else would you like to tell folks all across Montana in the meantime?
Well, first of all, thanks for watching. I don't know if you're watching CNN, but you might be watching the clips. Thanks for the support. I've been hearing from people in all over the country and some in Montana who are saying things like, I haven't ever watched CNN, or I haven't watched it in years, but they're interested in what we're doing, so I'm very grateful for that. I'll be grateful if you buy the book. It'll come out, and I think it'll be illuminating. If you believe what I believe, which is that common sense and a restoration of common sense was needed, then there'll be great vignettes and conversations in here about certain issues that I think will really resonate with people out there. You guys got a great state, a great local Republican delegation, great federal officials. So there's a lot of conservatives in Montana who I'm sure are straight behind the president.
What was the biggest wow moment for you with about 10 seconds to go that's going to come out in the book?
Oh, gosh. Well, I've had some great conversations, but with Elon Musk, I had a great conversation that I think will be really illuminating about how his life has been since he decided to work for the president.
Very interesting. Well, Scott Jennings, keep it up. An honor to chat with you here on Montana Talks.
We'll be back with the Best of Montana Talks right after these messages.
You're listening to the Best of Montana Talks.
Dallas Knight, U.S. Army veteran, a very cool retreat that's coming up, I think, later this summer. And it's a retreat for women warriors, not just from all across Montana, but from all across the country. Dallas Knight, great to see you again. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Aaron.
When I first had you on the show, we talked about your experiences in Iraq and just the struggles of transitioning, not just as a warrior, but especially as a woman warrior, and how different that transition back to normal everyday life can be. But I guess tell our listeners first off what all you're doing with Operation Juliet.
Yeah, Operation Juliet was really born out of the need to serve the female veteran community. There's not a lot of resources that cater to the specific challenges that women face as a veteran. And more so, I guess the flagship project under Operation Juliet serves the female combat veteran, which is an even smaller niche, but there's 300,000 women that served in Iraq or Afghanistan just in our generation, not to mention all the women that laid ground before us, right? But there's so many combat veterans that are women, and they have unique challenges. We're not all built the same. And what I have found through talking to many of these women is a large majority of them also experience military sexual trauma. So when it comes to programs and retreats and resources, who is there? The faculty that's running it, the founders, the operators, and no offense to them, but it does matter. And so when they look at a male-run, male-operated, male faculty, and then they're thinking about, you know, getting down to the most vulnerable state and trying to heal from past traumas, that's not as appealing, which reflects on the numbers of our brother and sister organizations across the country when I talk to them about how many women are coming through their programs.
Yeah, so you're actually going to be doing this Women's Warrior Retreat, and it's going to be out at the Quiet Waters Ranch outside of Belgrade, right there at the base of the Bridger Mountains. But so that's where it's going to take place. And so, but it was interesting. So when I attended your Operation Juliet fundraiser, you know, you talked about how for women warriors, they're not only trying to transition back into everyday life as warriors, but also just as women. And you look at all these veteran service organizations that are out there and these opportunities for veterans, these different programs, and almost all of them are more focused on things that are appealing to men, not necessarily things that appeal to women. And you made the point that a lot of these women are trying to reclaim their womanhood, and they felt like they lost a part of that when they were in the sandbox or wherever they were deployed to.
Yeah, and it's not that women don't like fishing and hunting and being outdoors. We absolutely love those things. But again, as you alluded, one of the key challenges is getting back in touch with our femininity. You know, when we go in the military, we all train the same. We're all shoulder to shoulder doing all of the same type of training, and we're taught at a very early stage that, you know, stuff down your feelings and emotions, and you've got to just compartmentalize all of that so that you can carry on in the mission. And that's amazing. We have to do that in order to survive and to keep our brothers and sisters safe while we're carrying on the mission. But when we come home, there's no reintegration into what it's like to be a woman, how to be feminine, re-embracing our emotions and our feelings and how to communicate that. So oftentimes we just stuff it down. And unfortunately, when we stuff all that down, it festers much like a cancer, and it'll implode. It's like a ticking time bomb that you never really know when it's going to explode. And these women are trying to manage their relationships, being a mother, re-entering into a new career while carrying around this, you know, 1,000-pound elephant in the room, and there's no support. And so a lot of times I'm hearing they feel isolated. They feel like they're alone in the situation. So Operation Juliet really is there to help them understand that they're not alone. There are many women that are going through, and not only are we going through the similar things, we're here to support and encourage and inspire you.
Well, Operation Juliet, I would encourage you, if you have the ability, show them your support, show these women warriors your support. But really, frankly, for our listeners all across Montana, you're helping women warriors all across Montana. You're helping women warriors all across the country. So you don't have to wait for your county to do a special, you know, county gives program to give to Operation Juliet.
Right. Yellowstone Valley Gives really is for the entire community nationwide. It's called Yellowstone Valley Gives because it's really about awareness about the nonprofits that reside within Yellowstone, but the giving goes way outside of that bound. And yeah, we do serve all female veterans. We have two primary initiatives that are in play now. That's the retreat that you discussed. It's right around the corner. Starts June 17th. We have 10 women coming in. Three of them are Montanans and seven are throughout the nation. But our other flagship program is our monthly gatherings. And so we bring together female veterans in the Billings area every month. And it's all about embracing that community again, but also exposing them to a variety of healing modalities to help them along their journey of overcoming whatever challenges and tribulations.
How enjoyable has it been for you to connect with so many other warriors as just a result of first publishing your book and then now launching Operation Juliet, your podcast, and everything else?
I mean, I work a full-time job in corporate America, so like every nick and cranny that I have spare, I spend working with Operation Juliet, and I am able to do so exhausted and overwhelmed and stressed, because when these women share what it brings to the table, when they share the feeling of community and feeling heard and valid and the messages that I get from them, and then seeing mentees of mine become mentors to other new female veterans that are coming through and just starting their healing journey, it makes it all worth it, and it really is a domino effect that we just started in October. And I feel like I have to constantly remind myself of that. We just started this organization just months ago, and we've already served over 30 female veterans right here in the Billings, Montana area. Again, we have multiple veterans flying in from all over the nation. The word is getting out. We are absolutely here to serve the female veteran, and I encourage you to learn more about us and to support the female veteran community.